And now, part three of the after show that's discussing season 5 of Arrested Development and the one network that had no choice but to air their coverage. Stay tuned.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
That's now, right, the ladies after and show. We have Jeffrey Crane Graham here.
I'm rudely stepping on Phil's intro, guys, but I'm back and I'm glad to talk about some Arrested Development.
Such Bluth
behavior.
Great, yeah
such behavior. Very Bluthy of me to jump right on Phil at the beginning.
Exactly. And it would be very Bluth behavior if we didn't introduce another panelist to today's episode. So we won't.
Oh, okay.
Just kidding. Welcome, Addison O'Connor, to the show.
Thank you. I'm so excited to talk about Arrested Development with you guys.
We're excited to have you.
Absolutely. For those of you just joining us, we are covering season 5 of the Netflix show for Arrested Development. This is, as I mentioned, part 3. So if you'd like parts 1 and 2, they are available to you. In part 1 in particular, we discuss Job, Michael, and Lucille. In part 2, we discuss the Fume case. And in this part, we will discuss George Sr., George Maharis. Sorry, that's George Michael.
Yes.
And, of course, Buster. Now, because it is Netflix, the way we've done it is we've watched all 8 episodes. And, therefore, it's spoiler-filled. So, if you haven't seen 8 episodes and don't want it spoiled, don't listen to this. Just watch it. Come back. If you don't give a rat's behind, then by all means. Also, as part of today's show, we've got some great news and gossip, like for example, some of the news and jokes you might have missed, and we're going to talk about some of our favorite new characters of this season. So lots to look forward to, and we'll also tell you what's coming up in our part 4 of the coverage.
And if any of you guys are Emmy nerds like I am, you love awards conversations. The award season is like my Super Bowl, so I have so many thoughts on Arrested Development award season. So stay tuned for that.
Absolutely.
I'm excited.
As we always kick off, we give our overall impressions. In particular, we're going to focus on these three. But since this is your first time to the show, Addison, what's your overall impression for any of the characters?
Well, as the season as a whole, I thought it was a hot mess.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. There was a lot of lying, a lot of scams, and the family wasn't as together as usual. Mm-hmm. With Michael leaving and coming back, Buster's in jail. I thought it was a hot mess.
Okay, so here's a question. Phil and I sort of agree. There's things we liked about this season, things we didn't love about this season. One area that both of us would agree in is we like it when the family's together more.
Yeah.
And you mentioned they were separated to the detriment of the show.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I feel like, though, scams and lying has always been a part of the show, kind of.
It has, but they took it to another level this time because they weren't together.
I see.
It kind of got a little messy when we had George Maharis in part of the show. Then he'd be George Michael. Mm-hmm. Is he dating Rebel Allie? Is he not? Like, what's going on? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think
the lesson is scams are best done together.
Yes, exactly.
That's
one of the things we talked about, Phil, was, well, at least for me, there was too much plot.
Mm-hmm.
It was almost like it was so focused on all of these specific details about scams and lying.
I think that's what made it such a mess.
Mm-hmm.
A good mess.
Yeah.
But there was so much detail in every lie that I even caught myself trying to keep up, you know, with what's going on now and, like, which scam we're working with.
Yeah, fair.
All right. Well, what about for you, Jeff? What are your overall thoughts on George Sr., George Michael, and then Buster?
George Buster. There probably is a long-lost George Buster that we'll meet in season 6.
Yeah, for sure.
So one of the things I love about this show is, like, even the names are inbred. Like, I feel like, what's the word? Incest is such a common motif in this show. But you think about it. George and Oscar are twins.
Mm-hmm.
Then their son,
George Oscar Bluth.
George Oscar Bluth is their son. Then Michael is their other son. Then we have George Michael, who's Michael's son. So there's like a total of 3 names in this family and probably like one paternal father because there's so much incest. But to answer your question, I thought this was a good George Michael season. Mm-hmm. I like George Michael a lot. I think Michael Cera is sort of quietly the heart of the show.
Yes.
It used to be Michael and George Michael, mm-hmm. but Michael kind of jumped the shark this season, which we talked about. I feel like for the most part, I totally recognized this version of George Michael. It was nice to have him around, and I believed his behavior. Like, I feel like what we saw from George Michael was consistent with what I knew of George Michael. I could always use more Buster.
always could have more Buster.
I don't feel like we got a lot of Buster this season.
No. But what we did get out of Buster was awesome.
Agreed. Yes. I got to meet Tony Hale a couple years ago, and he's just the sweetest guy. So I like him as an actor and as a person. I can always use more Buster. But what we, yeah, I agree. What we got of Buster was good. Did not get much George Sr. either, to me. I feel like, for me, George Sr. might have been...
Is that a knock on his masculinity?
Maybe. There's been a lot of talk about George Sr.'s slash Jeffrey Tambor's toxic masculinity in the news. So I don't know. I just feel like, to me, he might have had the weakest outing along with Lindsay. I feel like we saw the least of them, and I was, I don't know, just didn't get any highlight moments from those characters.
It was a very George Michael season.
It was, yeah.
Well, let's talk about George Sr.
Yeah. What do you agree with me, Phil, or what do you think?
I think, I mean, if you really sort of plot it out, George Sr. was involved in certainly much more than Buster and Lindsay. I think, like, objectively, plot-wise, Lindsay had the least to do than Buster. Mm-hmm. Then maybe I could see George Sr. as, like, the third in that realm. But if you kind of look at it, he spends a lot of time in Mexico. He's integral to the plot of
that's a good point.
Of the whole thing. I mean, maybe it's the fact that his name keeps getting brought up because everyone who goes down to Mexico is trying to get that land, and he is the owner of that land, so his name just comes up and you just think of it that way. But then the same argument could be made for Lindsay because everyone's searching for Lindsay even though we never see her.
It's a good point, though. I think what it is, because I appreciate what you're saying, I think for me it's that anytime George Sr. was on screen, rather than sort of playing, like I think the characters do on this show, he was just advancing the plot. Like, I feel like he was more of a mechanism than he was a character this season.
That's a good point.
So even when he was there, I didn't feel like he was really there.
Well, I mean, if you kind of look at past seasons of George Sr., you always felt like he was the one in control because he was pretty much in jail most of the time. And the only way that he advanced the plot was when people went to him in jail.
Yeah, even when he's not on the show a lot, everything kind of like falls underneath him. He's the one who's kind of controlling everything that happens in the plot.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true.
Well, as far as his big, I don't know, plot, his topics today, number one, him and Lucille didn't sell the cottage, so history, you know, comes, it resurfaces. His Mexico adventures, mainly with Job, and then the second time with Michael, and his search to kind of reinvigorate himself as he finds out because of the estrogen pills. And then we have to cancel the campaign because we find out that the land he thought he owned in the U.S. is not actually in the U.S. But let's start with Joe because that's a big part of it, right? We've been joking about his masculinity. And when we talked about Job, we highlighted this in particular as a fun aspect of those few episodes where they're in Mexico and every excuse they can come up with.
I loved that. That was one of the best parts of the whole season was their Mexico trip.
Mm-hmm. This was good. This was, to me, the strongest. Like, the George Michael questioning his masculinity and struggling with his alpha self. To me, this was the most tangible character work that was happening with George. Like, I think other than... Did I say George Michael earlier? I meant to say George Sr. Sorry. Again, there's, like, two total names in this show. They're just configured in different ways. Speaking of George Sr., anything having to do with his insecurities around masculinity... I liked that stuff because they were giving him work to do. They were allowing him to make choices as an actor and be funny. Mm-hmm. So all of this was working pretty well for me.
Well, the show's strongest when... The whole point of that trip was for them to bond. Him and Job to really bond, you know, father, son. And how many times have Job... Like, Job's whole motive has always been to impress his father.
Mm-hmm.
And this was sort of that trip that was supposed to kind of bring a little bit of that together.
Yeah.
And on the surface, they did because they kept saying, like, oh, she's not good enough, that type of thing. But for two completely different reasons.
Yeah.
One's a closeted gay, one's just, you know.
What'd you guys think about the bush when they're driving down the road and they're like, hey, look at that girl, she's real hot. And then they try and see her friend, but it's a bush.
It was a good joke. It was a good visual gag. Yeah. I mean, I got flashbacks to Plant slash Anne with that joke, which I appreciate. Just like failing to recognize or see a woman right in front of your face, which is pretty funny. It was good. I'm glad you brought that up.
Indeed. So, but how do we feel like, let me ask you guys this. How do you guys feel about the shift in the dynamic where George Sr. is no longer the primary catalyst for the family and it's more now Lucille?
I think it gave her a good opportunity to really take control of the show and of the family. I think she's always been underlying, like, in control of the family. What do you think, Jeff?
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think one thing I liked, though, was when George Sr. was in control, it gave Lucille one the chance to vie for that power, and it was always funny to watch Jessica Walter try to do that. So I think I missed, when she actually sits on the throne, you're sort of missing that attempt to take power away from her husband. But at the same time, I did like seeing George Sr. in a less powerful position. I just think I wish I would have seen more of it. Like, I wish the writers would have leaned into that more, because that was when we were seeing the most character work from him.
Well, what's interesting, you know, she's always, you know, that old adage, which I don't necessarily agree with, but behind every great man is a great woman. She was always kind of supportive, and I'm using air quotes, in that way of George Sr., whereas now he's not really backing her up like she did in the past.
Yeah, you're right.
I think their roles reversed. Especially when we found out he's been taking estrogen pills for the last 2 years. I think he was playing the more emotional character. We found him in George Michael's bed crying to Michael because she's with Dusty now and those thoughts. And she kind of played a more masculine role. Well, yeah. I don't want to say masculine, but she kind of took charge of
dominant.
The family. Yeah, she had the dominant role of the family in this season.
But I disagree simply because we've never seen Lucille cry or any of that stuff.
No.
It's a good point. I hear what you're saying.
Yeah.
I think maybe it used to be so interesting because both of them were sort of playing alpha in their own way. And now we see George Sr. as such a beta that maybe we kind of missed that a little bit.
Yeah, that's true.
I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, even she's the one who even at the end says, like, hey, we got to basically throw the campaign because ultimately the land's in Mexico. He doesn't know that. Part of the reason why we're talking about him, like, maybe this is for you, Jeff, why you felt like he didn't have a lot to do is because he was part of a lot of things but didn't really have a hand in it and didn't even know what the hell was going on.
Yeah,
sometimes I felt like him as a viewer. I was like, I also don't know what's going on, George Sr.
Yeah.
I can very much relate. I hope I haven't been taking estrogen pills for the last 3 years. I'm getting married in a month.
Oh, God.
Well, you know, I think that'll come later for you, Jeff.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll update you guys. I'll tweet it out. Let's move on.
Sure. Why not? But before we move on, speaking of what's going on, why don't we kind of update you guys as to what's going on here with the network? And for to a larger extent, you should know. But as far as the YouTube stuff, Addison, can you give us a little preview of how our YouTube works?
Of course. So, hey, AfterBuzzers, our network produces after shows for nearly all of your favorite TV shows, from dramas, reality TV, sci-fi, and more. There's no network that works harder than us to serve you guys as our television fans. But we really need your help right now. We're asking that you please subscribe to one or more of our channels. By subscribing to our channel, YouTube is going to suggest content that's tailor-made for you guys, and you're going to help AfterBuzz continue to grow. And if you're worried about those pesky notifications, don't be, because they're totally optional. So hit that subscribe button for us now for this channel and check out our other AfterBuzz YouTube channels as well. Let us know that you did so in the comments, and we're going to thank you on air next time. So for now, thanks for being the best fans and for helping us to be the ESPN of TV talk.
Absolutely.
Love it.
Thank you guys indeed.
Yes.
Speaking of things that need help, George Michael needs help to get $70,000 to bail out his
Wait, real
uncle.
Quick. Do you care if I say one more George Sr. thing before we move on, Phil? Is that okay?
Sure.
One thing I found really interesting about this subplot was with all the just the Jeffrey Tambor news, I felt like the show was kind of commenting on toxic masculinity. It's interesting that all of this was filmed before everything broke about Jeffrey Tambor. Mm-hmm. And then the show was all about him. I don't know. I don't know if you guys were reading that like I was, but just with that news contextualizing his storyline, I found it to be almost like how Arrested Development can be kind of prophetic in the way it sees things. Mm-hmm. I just found that to be very, very interesting. I don't know if...
I did notice that too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the big joke was they were commenting on Transparent more
I
so.
I noticed that as well.
And I think by doing it that way, it just kind of naturally fits into this other realm that they had never predicted.
Mm. Right.
Yeah, there was a scene where Michael was in the apartment and had the red wig, and then they went back to when George Sr. had on the wig and was playing that feminine character, and I think they made a comment about how he wasn't going to win an Emmy for dressing up as a girl or something, and I was like, that's a funny reference back to that movie or show.
Definitely. All right, we can move on to George Michael, Phil.
Fair enough. I mean, he's almost more emasculated than what's-his-face Tobias.
Yeah, this season, I would argue he was. Well, and Job. I mean, like, I think that was a huge theme this season, was just dudes being unable to, like, fill the identity they want to fill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I felt like almost every guy... In fact,
Drink beer.
Yeah, exactly. And we're going to get to Buster, but you could argue he was, like, the most alpha dude this season. So, super interesting.
Yeah, we'll certainly talk about it.
Yeah.
Also, someone who's finding his masculinity, George Maharis, dating Rebel Allie. And, you know, the big cliffhanger of season four now finally comes to fruition as far as what the aftermath is. Because it really irks George Michael that he punched his dad.
Yeah.
So much so that he has to talk to Maybe about it.
Yeah.
What do you guys feel is like the cat? Because really, his whole storyline continues to deal with Rebel Allie, you know, in large part.
How do you, I want to hear your opinion, Addison.
Mm-hmm.
So the love triangle of Michael, George Michael, and Rebel Allie, very long running plot
very
on this show.
Weird.
How do you feel as a fan of the show?
I think it went hand in hand with the show. We always have those weird plots going on. So it didn't really strike me as odd that they included it in the show.
Do you like it, though, as a fan of the show? Like, how do you feel about it?
I like it. I think it added another dynamic to his relationship, to George Michael, his relationship with his father.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was interesting how much he did regret punching his dad and how he kept going back to Maybe to vent and for that advice. I thought it was pretty funny.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's just interesting to hear because I think for me, I liked it, but I didn't. One thing I love about the show is that George Michael and Michael are the only, like, bros who have each other's
back.
Yeah,
and it was sad. I guess, yeah, it was really sad throughout the whole season, seeing them have those awkward conversations when they'd run into each other in the apartment, and it was very, like, superficial and one-sided. I don't know, it kind of made me sad as a fan.
Yeah.
Because they were, like, the two. It's like dad and son,
right.
You know.
Well, on the surface, they've never really seen eye to eye.
Mm-hmm.
Just, you go back to the pilot episode, what do we always say is the most important thing?
Breakfast.
Family. Oh, I thought you meant the foods you eat.
I thought you meant the food you eat.
Like, so, you know, you take that sort of same idea that we talked about with George Sr. and Job, where they're supposed to be bonding, and on the surface they are, but yet they have no, below the surface, they're completely
There's
talking about different things.
Yeah. That's a great point.
I mean, part of the, we open up this season talking about scuba lessons, and that's something that Michael won for his son, and George Michael just couldn't get away fast enough from.
Yeah, completely terrified.
Does it ever make you guys wonder what Mitchell Hurwitz's relationship was like with his dad? He's the creator of this show. There's just so many daddy issues on this show all the time.
Everyone has a daddy issue on the show.
Everyone has a daddy issue.
Every single one of the characters.
Yeah. I just would love... It's interesting in press. He'll talk all about his shows, the craft of his comedy, but he rarely opens up about his personal life. And if I had to speculate, I would just have to imagine there's some really interesting
problems,
stuff there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not really my business, but you have
is.
To wonder. Yeah.
You have to.
Yeah.
Like Tony Wonder.
Like Tony Wonder. Amen.
But, you know, and the other aspect that kind of comes to fruition as far as that notion, both Michael and George Michael are handed sort of photos, and they misinterpret the photos. In Michael's case, it's the photo, which eventually becomes the cliffhanger as far as who's in the stair car. For George Michael, it's the photo of Michael being at the Howard's get-together.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, I get you guys' points, but they've never been on the same page.
Right.
No,
ever.
That's a good point, because they never have.
Yeah, it's true. And the thing I was glad was the show at least, like, dealt with the fallout of season four.
Mm.
Excuse me. Because Michael and George Michael were at odds all of season four. At least with this season, they both felt bad about it. Like, I was like, okay, these are the character traits I recognize in the two of them. And those awkward character interactions did have me laughing a lot.
Yeah, and that's what makes the show,
right.
Is those awkward interactions.
Yeah. Ciao, Bella.
Like that was so funny.
Yeah.
One of the big things for both, and we talked about it from Michael's perspective, but let's talk about it from George Michael's perspective now, the Howard family get-together. And one of the pieces of advice that he gets is from maybe, hey, dye your hair, and, you know, it'll just lead to a breakup. Well, lo and behold, you can't show up to a Howard family get-together, and if you do have Howard red hair, then of course they're going to love you.
Right. Yeah, they were all over that.
It was, yeah. I will say, I tried to find a photo of this, and I was shocked I could not. So I loved seeing Michael Cera with dyed hair.
Mm-hmm.
If any of you guys can find that, tweet it, and we'll retweet it from AfterBuzz's account. Tweet it at AfterBuzz, and we'll retweet it. This was funny. I mean, this was like classic Arrested Development disguise moment. Mm-hmm. The Howard party in general, though, kind of weird.
It was weird.
Like, I enjoyed the aspects that they actually got a lot of the Howards together, and you had Bryce Dallas Howard and Ron Howard and this and that. I still don't love the breaking of the, like, I know we've broken the fourth wall at this point, but this is like the fifth wall.
Yeah, like, exactly.
Now Ron Howard is part of the show, but he's narrating, and then he's narrating himself before the narration of his dialogue.
Yeah.
I think it's just too much. I think, like, it's great in small doses. And to have a whole episode around this party, to me, didn't feel like the show was balancing the way I like it. It didn't. It's that the show's always been walking a tightrope. Critics talk about all the time how it's like a high wire act.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think the balance of if the show and the plot and the spices that make the show what it is are a person, I don't think that person had balance the whole time walking this tightrope. And I think this was too much meta for me, this whole party, because it was a whole episode.
Well, go back to the idea that he gets advice that Breble is actually using him. What did you guys think of that advice? Obviously, she can't be using him because his company's entirely fake, but nonetheless.
When Michael got the advice?
No, George Michael.
Oh, George Michael.
Yeah, I'm turning to Jeff now.
Exactly, I know. When George Michael got the advice that Breble was using him from...
Fake Block.
From Fake Block. But who gave that advice?
Bryce.
When Bryce Dallas Howard gave the advice to George Michael that he was being used by Breble. Yeah.
It's not convoluted at all.
I know, that's exactly. Even when you're summarizing these plot points, you're like, damn, this is a dense season.
Okay.
Which is part of the show.
I see where you guys are at now.
Yes.
I thought Michael got the advice when they were watching the security cameras. Oh, wait, no, his sister. His sister.
Lindsay let Michael know.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a plot that's come up multiple times.
You're totally fine.
So yeah, it is a plot that I guess it has come up multiple times in different iterations.
Right.
So I guess let's just talk about the overall notion of it instead of a specific moment.
I thought it was funny. I mean, I like the inclusion of the Howards, and it was cool to see like Bryce Dallas Howard here. I mean, obviously she's now an A-list star because she's in the Jurassic World franchise. So it was cool. But yeah, I think when the show gets so in the weeds with its own jokes, sometimes it can be hard to really see the comedy because it's so dense.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I liked this. My honest problem with all these conversations at the Howard party was, and I'll be interested to hear how you feel about this, Phil, because you're an editor. I thought this was all kind of poorly edited. Like, it very much felt like the Howards were not actually there when this was shot. And they had a lot of over-the-shoulder conversations. And I feel like I was seeing stand-ins left and right for these Howards.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't read that deep into it. I just knew... I mean, to me, the whole storyline, as you mentioned, was awkward. So, like, it's... I don't start to break it down into lower levels. It's kind of like, number one, does this work?
Right, narratively.
If it doesn't, then you're like, okay, well, why am I going in deeper?
Right. Mm-hmm. That's fair. Yeah, I'm used to the show being very tightly edited, and I felt like this was the only real scene in the show where I sort of felt like I was being betrayed by the editing.
Yeah, it was a little messy.
A little messy, yeah, which I'm so used to so much polish on this show. So I'd be curious in the comments if any of you guys noticed any specific post-pro details like that. Just because I rarely even notice that stuff, and I was...
Yeah, I mean, think about it this way, though. There's, you know, I probably... a lot of people had to be shot an entire day. Like, that probably, at most, took 2 days.
Right. Mm-hmm.
My guess is a day. And think of all the coverage you have to get in that singular day.
Mm-hmm.
And so you got people running around left and right, and, okay, then maybe you have pickups late. Like, there's a lot that goes into it, and, yeah, it's going to be kind of hodgepodge together.
Well, and I'm sure Bryce Dallas Howard is probably shooting Jurassic World, so... Mm-hmm. I don't know.
She's like, I got a day, so let's make this happen.
Yeah, exactly. But I don't know. It was fun. It was just a little too much in Howards.
Well, how about this? What do you guys think of their continued relationship? Obviously, it's built on nothing but lies. Because whether or not she's using him, he's certainly not honest with her.
I'm kind of done with Rebel.
Yeah, I'm kind of done with her, too. I feel like her character isn't significant enough for the plot to carry on. Like, she's not needed.
Yeah. In terms of, I feel like when we have nine principals who are all so good, I like a guest star that sticks around for 3 to 4.
Mm-hmm.
I love, like, a Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Julia, that's her name, right?
Julie.
Why did that sound wrong when I just said that?
I don't know.
But I love her being a blind lawyer for 4 episodes, you know?
And they were spread out.
Yeah. I'm just, we've had, she's shown up in almost every episode for 2 seasons.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, she doesn't have nearly the same depth of character as the rest of the Blues. So I'm kind of like, why so much time with Rebel?
Yeah.
I get it. Well, at the very least, George Michael goes and gets advice from maybe about Rebel.
Yeah.
So that at least leads them together. What did you guys do? Like, this is a different dynamic, maybe, because, pun intended.
Nice.
The roles are reversed, where maybe, I don't know, do you guys think she's trying to go after George Michael?
In a way, I do, and I think this season was George Michael's, all of his fantasies coming true about the kissing cousins and everything. They finally kissed, and she was really hardcore pushing that, the kissing cousins theme.
This was such a funny callback because early season one, George Michael, what if we just kissed to, you know, freak them out?
Yeah.
So it was funny to have this the shoe on the other foot. In general, all the George Michael maybe stuff I liked. I thought this was one of the best threads of season 5.
Yeah, I think, you know, as far as honesty, they're always, when you talk about kind of the heart of the show, they've been, because they're both like, basically the offspring of something really messed up, whatever that
for
is.
Sure.
They have a relatability factor to themselves. And by the way, as your intern supervisor, none of what the Blues do you should ever copy, including kissing your cousin.
Noted.
It is funny, though, because like you could most comedies have a love story, right? Mm-hmm. Like an on-again, off-again. And really, they're the love story of Arrested Development. They're the on-again, off-again. Just forget their cousins, and it's very romantic.
Yeah, but unlike Ross and Rachel, I'm not rooting them at the end of the...
A little bit, though, Phil.
There's a little part of you that...
I feel like if they do it, then they have to, like, subvert it and, like... I don't know, I'm a terrible human being. Have, like, the world's worth offspring and be like, oh, well, this is why you shouldn't do it. This is why you shouldn't marry your cousin.
That's the final scene we see is a challenging pregnancy, and it ends on incest is bad.
Yeah.
I will say, the show, incest is an essential component of the DNA of the show. Like, there's no denying that the writers are really interested in incest, so who knows?
Well, I love their relationship in this season.
Yeah.
Taking away the love weird incest triangle thing, they are closer, they're friends,
yes.
And he'll go over to the senior citizen home and they'll talk, and I love how he vented to her about everything and she would come and be there for him and give him good advice. I thought it was a better relationship this season.
Yeah, it was the first time they haven't been super awkward around each other.
Yeah, they were close.
Yeah.
Well, we talked about, from Maybe's perspective, their trip down to Mexico, but as far as George Michael is concerned, I loved when he joins up with the University of California Irvine students.
Yeah.
That was so random. Funny. Yeah.
This was good.
It was a very Americanized version of Mexico at that point, which I appreciated the globalization.
I love when he asked for a Mexican Coke.
Yeah.
We just call it Coke.
Yeah.
Yeah, this was good.
Mexico is a very reoccurring theme throughout this entire thing.
It's another example of how the show is so prophetic, because since 2005, they've been talking about building a wall and, like, xenophobia around the border. And I will say, however you feel about the show and the press surrounding the show, and however you feel about whether or not the show has lived up to the brilliance of its early seasons, it's always been 2 months ahead of the news cycle in a way that you have to applaud the writers.
True.
Yeah.
Indeed, indeed. Any final things about George Maharis before we move on to Buster?
I think Michael Cera is wonderful. I've always loved him as an actor, and it's so funny. He's probably in his 30s now, right?
Yeah.
Oh,
and
wow.
He still looks 18, which just, like, it helps the character so much. And, yeah, in terms of performers, I'll follow most of these performers. I would watch in anything, but I think Michael Cera's a pretty underrated comic actor, and I think he's just really great in this show continually.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right, so Buster, let's talk.
My favorite character.
Why do you love Buster?
Interesting.
He's so funny. I think he's the one that holds the whole show together, especially in this season. It was Michael was supposed to look after Buster. He told him to go as a missing person. And the whole show, they're looking for Lucille, too. They're trying to find Buster. They end up finding him in prison. I mean, I think the whole season kind of revolved around Buster.
That's fair. Hey, brother.
He's just funny. Next to Tobias.
Yeah. Interesting. B and T are your favorites. I get that. Buster's one of my favorites on the show as well. Mm-hmm. I think my favorite
moments.
Yeah, he's the most innocent. Yeah, and my favorite moments are usually Buster moments. Yeah.
He's so oblivious to what's going on.
Mm-hmm. And he's a cartographer, which you gotta love.
Of course the blue beans land. Yeah, I mean, one of the things I always appreciate that no matter what, he's always down for the cause, to help the family. And that's, if you want Buster to do anything, you just preface it with that, like, this is for the family.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, we talked about it last time a little bit, but now we can talk about it more at length because it's from his perspective, like, wiping the footage away. This is why he gets jailed, is because he tries to make this thing, the sacrifice on behalf of the family. And lo and behold, the sacrifice he ends up making is being in jail because no one realizes he actually is.
And it's because the fake block is fake.
Yeah, I mean, this felt very Arrested Development.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
Again, one thing the season has done, which is cool, is taken plots we've seen and just put different characters mm-hmm. in them. So it's kind of a very multi-layered throwbacky joke that Buster is in jail.
Yeah.
You know, just on the surface, which is, it's funny, it's smart.
Well, you know, one of the things I appreciate, like, if nothing else, I mean, you could certainly say they tried and they utilized Ron Howard and the Howards as best that they could. Because, you know, we've talked about the various plot points of all this. We talked about Rebel when we talked about Job. We talked at length about the TV series. Well, Buster is the culmination of this TV series with Ron Howard because Ron Howard is doing the interview in jail for a true crime series. But Buster confuses him for a skinhead, of all things.
It's funny. A lot of Howards still, but funny.
Yeah. It was funny.
Yeah.
I don't think there's honestly too much to really say about Buster, apart from one of my favorite gags was at the end, the old Buster Keaton, which I think is a very smart play on words, but you kind of got to think about it, where it goes into the black and white. He's pretending he's the prisoner of the parade, but of course he's a prisoner in real life, and then the escape attempt in black and white. I thought that actually was a funny gag.
Smart. It was smart. I agree.
One of the things I do want to go back to because we didn't quite hit, but it does, you know, it does tie into Buster is the photo. We mm-hmm. confuse Buster and Lucille too in the stair car, but it's actually Maybe and George Michael. Now, I want to get your guys' opinion about should George Michael have told the truth to Michael at that moment?
What do you think, Jeff?
Yes, I do think he should have told the truth. But I'm thinking about it like a writer, probably not like assessing the characters. I think the show is better because he told the truth.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking too. Obviously, he should have told the truth, but it made the show better that he didn't.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's just funny when it comes to that because Michael's tried to instill such good morals onto George Michael.
Mm-hmm.
Yet it's always at the expense of himself.
Right.
It's like, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, that's smart.
So you're right. I mean, from a writing perspective, it does make it quite hilarious.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, if there's nothing else about any of the three, we can safely move into news and gossip.
Let's do it.
AfterBuzz TV News.
All right, so before we get into some Emmy stuff, we've been talking about a lot of throwbacks. And if you want a trip down memory lane, Vulture.com put together 400 Easter eggs from Arrested Development that you may have missed. Now, truthfully, the list for me, if you're an Arrested Development enthusiast, you kind of will remember these. But nonetheless, it's fun to revisit it. It's in a written form, so it's a little different than just watching the gags, which is always fun. To give you an example, a little taste, Tobias says, "I'm surprised that she's going after somebody so similar to my own type." And this, in a sense, is a callback to his book, The Man Inside Me.
I forgot.
So yeah, it's just a fun little thing. But Jeff, we talked about there being no Emmy nominations for Arrested Development last week in our anticlimactic news. However, you can now sort of expand upon that a little bit.
Yeah, I'm such a nerd for the Emmys. Mm-hmm. I like love the race. I like follow Emmys blogs. I like love goldderby.com because I'm not the biggest sports guy. Phil knows whenever he watches the World Cup, I'm like, this one's like soccer, right? Yeah. But I love the Emmy race. So this is the first time Arrested Development hasn't gotten any Emmy nominations. It was completely shut out. Interestingly, because I would say season 4 was weaker than this one, and that season got 4 Emmy nominations. So let's first talk about how do you guys feel overall knowing the show didn't get Emmy noms, and then let's talk about where they potentially got snubbed.
Right now, we didn't even get a full season, so it's kind of also tough to judge like where we're going to end up.
True.
I think that, number one. Number two, in general, yeah, I think they're just trying out new things. Like, we talked about the murder mystery aspect of the show, and it's just not hitting what it used to. And part of, like, if you look at it, season 4 was back in, like, this was one of Netflix's first shows.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, we talked a lot, like, Netflix has overtaken HBO as far as Emmy nominations across the board. Mm-hmm. You know, not just for comedy, but, you know, we're talking all things. So the TV dynamic has changed completely.
Right.
As far as it getting snubbed, I don't know. I just think there's so much damn good TV.
Yeah. What do you think?
I agree. I also think, like you said, with the murder mystery and them trying out new things in the season, I just don't think it really hit with their fans.
Yeah.
And I've been a dedicated Arrested Development fan, and it just wasn't quite the same as the other seasons to me.
Yeah. It is interesting because Netflix is essentially competing against itself. I mean, really, if you look at the comedy nominations and all the nominations, Netflix holds so many of them. The one category where I feel this show got pretty dramatically snubbed is Jessica Walter's performance of Lucille.
Yeah, totally see that.
The other, I'm assuming she would have been nominated for supporting in a comedy, or do you guys think lead in a comedy?
I think it would have to be supporting.
So these are all shows that I watch. Zazie Beetz in Atlanta as Van, Alex Borstein as Susie Meyerson in The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, A.D. Bryant on SNL. Oh, Betty Gilpin on Glow is very, very good. Leslie Jones on SNL, Kate McKinnon on SNL, Laurie Metcalf on Roseanne, and Megan Mullally on Will and Grace. I feel like we probably could have used one less SNL nomination and slid Jessica Walter in there. Especially when
one less Roseanne. I think that's interesting how that made a...
Yeah, that's... I think with that, the way I'm interpreting it is if we're talking about the press surrounding the Emmy, the press fiascos that we've gotten for a lot of comedy shows this year around Emmy noms, that disastrous Arrested Development interview, kind of all of the guys looked bad during that, and I feel like the show itself was kind of implicated in that. Whereas with Roseanne, I feel like it was like their head honcho made a huge mistake, and the Academy didn't want to punish the rest of that cast. So I almost feel like I love Laurie Metcalf. I think she should have won an Oscar this year for Lady Bird. Mm-hmm. But you could maybe wonder if maybe her nomination was a bit of a consolation for the damage that Roseanne Barr single-handedly did to that show. I don't know. I think some of these conversations are speculative. You could argue that awards in Hollywood in general are stupid. But I love the race, so I'd be curious.
Unlike a sports team, like, there's no clear-cut winner. It's not like no one really outscores. Like, the only thing to really make this any fair, and I don't even know if it would be that, is audience.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just such a nerd for award season. So if any of you guys have thoughts, I'd love to comment down below. We can talk about it. I just think Jessica Walter, I do think she's so incredibly gifted. And
I would like to see, here's the thing, I would like to see her for Archer.
Yeah.
To be honest, like, I think she's good in this, and she always performs. And I know we get to see her, like, physically. And on Archer, it's only her voice. But I think that, in a sense, makes it even more tougher. And Archer, by far, just continues to be better and better.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things where I know she's had Emmy success in the past, but I feel like she almost deserves that second career revival Emmy nod, even if it's not specific. Like, they will do this with actors and directors, sort of that career Emmy or that career Oscar. I can't say enough good things about how wonderful she is. And for all the abuse she had to take on the set, I'd love to see some kind of acknowledgement by the Academy that she's still doing amazing work. But
yeah, she plays an incredible role in Arrested Development.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Jason Bateman, however, is getting Emmy nominations.
He sure did.
But not for Arrested Development.
Not for Arrested Development.
But a Netflix show.
Yes, he got an actor nomination in lead drama for Ozark, and a directing nod also for Ozark. Because in case you guys didn't know, Ozark is sort of similar to Breaking Bad. It's like you're following an everyman who's trafficking drugs. And he not only acts in the show, but directed four of the episodes and was kind of spearheaded the show getting made.
Yeah. Good for him.
Good for him.
Yeah,
I think that's awesome.
Good
yeah.
Well, if you've ever wondered what the characters would do in New York, AMNY.com asked the cast members themselves, and here's what they have to say. Ali Schwakat said, maybe would probably be downtown somewhere dressing like an old lady to get money and spend it all in Brooklyn and hating how long it took her to get to Brooklyn and actually hating all the hipsters there.
Yeah,
for sure.
Will Arnett says, Job would be at Studio 54. Then he'd be hanging around with Andy Warhol.
I don't know about that.
He'd be hitting up the gay clubs now.
Exactly.
Yeah, he would be hitting up the gay clubs.
He'd be hanging out with Stefan from SNL is what he would be doing.
Yes.
New York's hottest club is WESH. He'd be at WESH.
Right on. Tony Hale says, I don't know if Buster could handle New York. He'd be lost in the park in a daze or staring at a wall in some hospital.
That's completely accurate.
Yep.
He would just be wandering around completely lost.
Macaulay Culkin style.
Yeah.
No, but Macaulay Culkin, I was going to say, Macaulay Culkin at least has the wherewithal to and the resources to handle himself.
True. Buster would just be walking around with his metal hand.
The claw.
Yeah.
Hey, guys. And speaking of George Sr., Jeffrey says that the Blues would definitely be close to Wall Street. We would be down there listening to the vibe, taking what's new.
I don't know. Wait. Mm-hmm. The Blues would definitely be close to Wall Street, yes. Listening to the vibe, taking in what's new. No, they would be like trying to create their own scam. They would try to like Enron it. They would be trying
scheming.
To Enron it. Yeah.
But I think they're better in a smaller local environment versus like Wall Street's a little too above them.
Yeah.
Too big of a fish for the Blues to fry.
Yes.
Agreed.
All right. Well, let's talk about our favorite characters of this new season, season 5. Addie, want to open us up?
Sure. I really like Dusty. He played a very, very tiny part, but I thought it was very interesting because Lucille having her little relationship with Dusty really affected George Sr. Mm-hmm. So I think even though Dusty's role is very small, it really affected the relationship between Lucille and George.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, yeah, it's always interesting when someone like that goes for someone younger. And I'm very curious to see how their relationship does end up because, you know, by the end of these 8 episodes, we see them talking and they do need each other in a sense. But obviously they have no qualms about essentially just beating the crap out of each other emotionally.
I hope Dusty has a bigger role in the second half of the season.
Yeah, I like Dermot Mulroney, so it was fun to see him. Mm-hmm. It's funny, he always sounds like his name is fake. Dermot Mulroney. It just sounds it sounds like a made-up name, but I like Dermot Mulroney a lot. I was going to say Dusty, but you stole it. So, I'm just kidding. But I'm going to go ahead and say Kyle Mooney's character is Murphy Brown.
Oh,
even though it was such a minor, I mean, like, you could argue it wasn't given that much to do, but I've always liked Kyle Mooney, and I liked the magnified version of Tobias's method acting. Mm-hmm. So I'll say Murphy Brown.
I'm totally on you with that.
Yeah, we could switch.
We got a little swap-a-roo.
Yeah.
Let's see. I was going to say Murphy Brown for mine, but I'll pick someone else.
Were there that many new characters, though? A lot of who we saw has been on before.
You know what? I'll pick Lottie Dottie.
Lottie Dottie Da.
Lottie Dottie Da.
She was good. Yeah. I appreciated her. I thought that was a lot of funny.
A lot of funny.
A lot of funny. Lottie Dottie Da.
Yeah, it's a good joke.
I love the tongue twister names. Bob Loblaws Loblog.
Bob Loblaws Loblog drops La Bomb is my favorite headline from that show.
So lots of good stuff there. Anyway.
Bless you.
Bless you, Tom.
That wraps up part three of our Arrested Development coverage. In part four, we're going to talk about all the ancillary characters and their subplots, like Sally Sitwell, Lucille Too. We'll talk more about the Howards in particular, so lots and lots to discuss there. But that will end our coverage of season five. So if there's anything that you guys want us to cram in before we wrap out,
yes,
write in the comments section. Let us know what your thoughts and opinions are, because that's going to be it until we get to part two. In the meantime, if you guys want to talk with us online but off the show, where can people interact with you guys?
Ladies first.
Oh, thank you. You can find me on Twitter at Addie O'Connor, A-D-D-I-O-C-O-N-N-O-R.
Great, Addie, thank you for joining.
Yes, thank you guys for having me. I had a great time.
Good. You can find me online at Jeffrey C. Graham.
And I'm at Phil Svitek. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll see you next week for another Arrested Development. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV.